Well, Faster Mai, it's just after midday, Mun Le on Wednesday, Jacrain and Jayu Le, Mi Avril, the 10th day of April. And normally, when I'm doing the Man in Line, I tell you about the Manx seasons. And Mi Avril would be Dera Ari, which would be the end of spring in the Manx calendar. So, whatever happened to the springtime? This is Manx Radio's Man in Line, and it's me, Phil Gorn. I had occasion this morning to trim me toenails, so I had access to all me fingers, thumbs and toes. And I was counting out, it must be about 40 days and 40 nights now of shock and rain. So maybe this is the Mananan, the Manxman, I should say. That was the whole purpose of it, was the equivalent of Noah's Ark. It's certainly wet out there, and certainly heart goes out to all the farmers who are trying desperately to lamb their sheep and plant crops and all the things that they need to do, and indeed to gardeners too. I've been struggling in the garden, but anyway, enough of that. More importantly, the Council of Ministers are going out on road shows. They're going to ask you for your views, and you'll have the opportunity to ask them whatever questions you like. So that should be interesting. The four road shows are taking place week commencing Monday the 22nd of April, and Monday it's at Castle Rushen High School, Tuesday the 23rd at Queen Elizabeth II High School, Wednesday the 24th at Ballacameen High School, and Thursday the 25th at Ramsey Grammar School. So if you want really good polished answers, possibly head to Ramsey, because they'll have plenty of practice by then. But yes, is this a good initiative? Do you think the Council of Ministers perhaps should have done this 2.5 years ago? Do you think that maybe they've got enough to do and they should actually be getting on with the day job rather than going around having consultations and meetings? Certainly, it's a great opportunity to talk to the ministers and find out what they're up to, and whether they actually are managing to deliver what you want. Don't forget, and some people already have done this, don't forget that this is your programme. And what we really, really want to hear is your voices. 66 13 68 is the number. A couple of people waiting already, and you can text 166 177 or email studio@manxradio.com. Sorry, frogging my throat there. And one text that came into the morning show, which I thought I should read out, because it does seem to be a prevalent view amongst a number of people. And this was, I've lived in the Isle of Man for over 30 years. My grown-up children can't afford to live here, no housing for young people, so they stay in the UK. I'm now at the stage my husband and I will join them. Cost of living increased taxes, NI, there are no longer any advantages of living here. Added to the fact, recent boat cancellations, frequent flight cancellations, even if it is weather-related, is just making us feel this is not where we want to live anymore. Alf Cannon, David Ashford opened the floodgates during COVID, inviting lots of older retirees to come and live here, and now we have no houses for our young people, an island full of an older generation. Good luck, Isle of Man government, you reap what you sow. And that's from Pam. Well, hopefully Pam will avail herself of the opportunity to go and put those points to the various ministers. But we have two callers waiting, and if I can remember the sequence of buttons and things to press, perhaps we'll start with Eddie, and Eddie is talking about flooding. Faster Mai, good afternoon, Eddie.
Hiya, you alright?
Hi, good.
I know that you're familiar with my area, Ronagh.
Indeed, yes.
And we've had quite a bit of rain lately. Excuse me. I'm like Andy, I've got a bad throat.
Well,
we're all suffering.
Lemsips are very good, I'm told.
Rum's even better.
Yeah, yeah, the flooding has been pretty desperate, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, the top road, which is the one I was referring to when they were talking about the wind turbines, the top road at the moment is like a river, running right away from Roanoke Chapel down towards the Cobby Glen Road. It's a wash. Now, perhaps the government should realise this, that if they actually interfere with the heathland that's up above it and put a minimum of 2,500 tons of concrete up there, it's going to treble what amount of water is possible to come down, because it will channel it all into one tiny little section. So I know that Ramsey was the planning permission for the estate was turned down on because of it's on the floodplain and it could interfere with all the floods and nature and all the rest of it. But this, I suggest that some of Alf Cannon especially should come up today, just take a drive up to the top of Roanoke and have a look at it. And you know yourself what the area is like. So,
and of course, this is, I mean, that's a specific instance with regards to the wind farm. And as I ought to mention, you know, I have an interest in this and being a close neighbour too. But of course, this is across the island that flooding is likely, if climate change is a thing. Flooding is likely to become more prevalent. And certainly what we've seen in this last spring is certainly what climate scientists are predicting is going to happen.
Yeah, well, it could get worse, couldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and so, I mean, if you're but if you're making plans for anything that you do, if you're doing a housing estate, you must put the land drains and everything first, and your main sewers and your stormwater. That all goes in on a site before you start, and you always over. Estimate how much water you will get. So the same would apply here. But any amount extra of water will cause serious flooding here. So, you know, there's one more definite reason, and it's obvious for anybody to come and have a look at.
Yep, indeed, absolutely. And yeah, part of the answer to climate change is what they call adaptation. And certainly we don't seem to be ahead of the curve when it comes to adapting our services, our facilities, infrastructure to cope with this extra water. And certainly we shouldn't perhaps be thinking about doing extra things to make matters worse. Anyway, I better go because there's two more callers on, and I think we need to go. So thanks, Eddie. Julian has been waiting on line one, and he wants, I think, to talk about the meat plant. Now, what am I doing wrong here? Not quite sure. Oh, no. I'm clicking away. I wonder what button I need to press to get Julian. Am I clicking the wrong button? No, it's the right mouse. Click. Nothing seems to be happening. No. Oh well, Julian, I'm quite keen to find out what it is you have to say, but for whatever reason, it doesn't seem to want to let me in. Maybe. No. Even the technical expert, the young person in Manx Radio, has come in to help, and they don't seem to be able to manage it either. I've wrecked the system, ladies and gentlemen. buttons are being pressed frantically, knobs pushed up and down, we don't seem to be able to hear from Julian. But of course, the meat plant is something that is of deep concern, certainly. I know farmers are pleased that perhaps there's an indication that a 95% of UK price guarantee is being suggested now. I should give you a quick update on the computer system there. We're now on the switch it off and switch it back on again point of view. So we're getting there. Getting there. Yeah, yeah. It looks like. Oh, yes, here now. Look at this, Julian. So, Julian, you wanted to talk to me about the meat plant.
Hiya, Phil. Yeah, a couple of things. The meat plant and the CAS report, which was mentioned on the news just a little bit earlier. But how are you, by the way? You all right?
Yes, well, you know, I'm getting old. I'm a year younger than Manx Radio, so, yeah. But other than the general ravages of time, doing well. Yes. But nobody wants to hear about me. Let's hear about the meat plant.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, it might be helpful to hear from the main people involved in the decision, it seems, to place a load of prime Manx meat into a skip. I'm just wondering whether it might be interesting to interview such people as Rebecca Meyer, or Meyer, however she pronounces her name. She was brought over to be the managing director of the meat plant in June last year. Rebecca has a BA in business and marketing from Hull University. And I think previously she was a brand manager at the now defunct Milk Link in the UK. I noticed, interestingly, though, that she was also the marketing manager for 9 months in 2011 at the Agriculture and Horticulture Development Board, which a few weeks ago I mentioned. They're the board that calculated that many UK farms are emitting a tiny fraction, 95% less than the IPCC are claiming for emission figures. So as she's been part of that board, it might be interesting for her to comment on that. At the same time, might be interesting to talk to John Taylorson, who is a director at Isle of Man Meat, who has an MBA in marketing and corporate finance. We've also got Colin Mitchell, who's part-time vice chairman, who has a diploma in company direction and is head of corporate governance, transformation and compliance. And if we go more towards government, of course, we've got our Claire Barber. I noticed Steve Forden, head of energy policy at DEFRA and also greenhouse gas inventory project officer. And finally, Peter Longworth, who is the energy efficiency manager, who has an MSc in sustainable development.
And those last two, are they directors of the meat plant? Or?
No, that's the DEFRA side, sort of oversight from government. So, you know, I don't know whether methane has got anything to do with this or whatever, but if they're checking for gas inventories of greenhouses in DEFRA, makes you wonder if any of the decision-making is coming from that.
Well, Finlow Castain, who was formerly of this parish, as they say, used to be General Secretary of the Manx National Farmers Union. He now runs a podcast about the agricultural industry. It's quite an interesting listen if ever you get a chance. But Finlow certainly has done a lot of work in relation to the carbon emissions of livestock, and of course what Finlow has pointed out is that the cattle and sheep on the Isle of Man certainly are pretty much the similar sorts of numbers. They haven't changed that much over the past 400 or 500 years, and therefore they're emitting the same amounts of methane or carbon dioxide and the like as perhaps they've been for the last 3 or 4 centuries. So actually counting their emissions as if they were something fresh and new may be a little unreasonable and unfair. But in terms of the actual meat plant, I mean, you started off by talking about the skipped meat. Would you not agree that it is more important to ensure the safety of food arriving on our shelves than risking perhaps contaminated meat getting there?
Well, I'd like to know. I mean, the story that's going around is that some meat was being hung for aging process, and they touched each other. Now, as far as I'm aware, the rule is that you trim off the meat if you're worried about it. But if they're going to be concerned about meat touching, am I to understand then that people who work at the meat plant, every time they touch any meat, they have to change their gowns, their boots and their gloves every time they touch a different meat source? I find that hard to believe. You'd be spending all day changing your clothes every 2 seconds, wouldn't you? So I find this strange that they if a couple of sides of meat are touching, just trim off the edges that came into contact, I would have thought. But anyway.
I mean, the meat plant itself is now reaching a ripe old age, and certainly some of the concerns that I've seen expressed recently relate to perhaps some of the creaking machinery at the meat plant. Do you think there's an appetite, excuse the pun, an appetite in government or indeed across the island to spend money to invest in modernising facilities to actually provide services that are fit for the decade we now live in?
Well, maybe the question is, why hasn't it been modernised over the years? Why has it been let to get to this stage?
Well, certainly I know part of the answer to that is that there has been quite a bit of investment over the years. But I suppose fundamentally, after a period of time, if equipment, you know, the general processes start to creak. I don't know. I'm not an expert on the meat plant, but yeah, just a thought. Anyway, is that all for now, Julian?
Just one quick one. Front page headline, today's Daily Mail, titled, "At Last, A Voice of Sanity on Children and Trans Dogma." And the article describes the publication of the Cass Report by Dr. Hilary Cass, which has been 4 years in the making. She's a consultant in paediatric disability at St. Thomas's Hospital in London and was also president of the Royal College of Paediatrics and Child Health. And she's expressed grave reservations in her 400-page, and this is the interim report, about how children have been let down by so-called gender services, a lack of research into puberty-blocking drugs like triptorelin, used not only to repress natural hormones, but is also the weapon of choice to chemically castrate sex offenders. Probably not a good idea to give that to a 9-year-old. Side effects in young children prescribed with triptorelin are increased incidence of multiple sclerosis, osteoporosis, brittle bones, and cancers, and that's within the 15 years that it's been known about. So we don't know what further problems will occur, you know, going forward into the future. She also says that this could be a medical disaster that dwarfs the thalidomide scandal. She's also saying irreversible medical procedures like double mastectomies and other amputations. She recommends that instead of going straight to medical interventions, clinicians should be alert for undiagnosed depression, eating disorders, autism, as well as family issues such as sexual or physical abuse, neglect or violence in the home. The underlying causes of gender dysphoria are mental distress, ill health and trauma. She also warns that social transitioning children as young as 9 in schools, where a child is treated as if they have already changed genders, for example, giving them different pronouns or changing their clothing to the opposite sex, often without the parents' knowledge, psychologically dangerous and divisive. Mm-hmm. And she also says that a child is socially transitioned, far more likely that they will proceed later in life to a medical pathway, which kind of is a sign that left to their own devices, they will simply grow out of it. Mm-hmm. I wonder, you know, we're following this sort of the transgender thing. We had the problem with the QE2. If we're going to follow the UK, perhaps we need to look at the front page of today's Daily Mail and wonder if they're going to change course, then maybe we should too.
Well, it certainly is going to provoke quite a lot of debate, I suspect, as people get a chance to read into the detail of that report. But sadly, Julian, I'll have to leave you there. And I think it's time for some advertising. The Nation Station, Manx Radio. And you are listening to The Man and Line, and yes, I'm afraid it is me, Phil Gorn, but hopefully Andy will be back. A little bit under the weather today, but hopefully he'll be back tomorrow. And quite an exciting programme with the Douglas South MHKs. I think that's tomorrow. What else have we got to tell? Oh, yes, the Kelly's Eye is going to be talking about a view from Carnen towards the end of the programme. But before we have the view from Carnen, we have the view from Duin. And I think, faster my Duin, I think it's the meat plant again.
Yeah, faster my Phil. I think it's the first time that we've actually spoken on this programme.
Well, there you are. So,
you there caught we go, me. Another first. Another first. How's the knob pushing going on up there?
Well,
are you pushing the right knobs?
I did push all the right knobs and the right buttons, but for some reason the online, what do they call it? Bionic Studio. It sounds very fancy, doesn't it? But it seemed to have frozen.
It
so
does,
we had to switch it off and switch it back on again. And now it's such wood. It seems to be working fine.
Go. It's all about how you hold your face and what knobs you press.
I reckon so.
Now, I could get diverted here with what Julian was saying about the transgender, but I'm going to stay on subject.
Yeah.
And we're just following on from what you're saying there, Phil, about looking at what's happening in the UK. And I've said that over a few things of looking what's happening before we jump down the same route and make mistakes. And that would also apply to the wind turbines as well. We look at the problems that they're having with decommissioning big wind turbine sites up in Scotland now as well. So it might be worth the government just checking all this stuff out about the cost of decommissioning before they go down certain routes. Now back on track. We're talking. I just wanted to drop in on the roadshow there as well, Phil. I've seen you at the government conferences at the Villa covering them. And I must say, a lot of your gender and perspective programmes are very interesting.
Well, that's very kind of you.
Absolutely. And I'm just wondering with the roadshow, is this government's PA initiative now? They're saying, hey, boys, we've got a bit of the natives are getting restless out there. We need to get out and talk to them on the streets. Is there a bit of that coming in here? You know, they're looking at the threads going around and the negativity from local people and knowing that they're unhappy. Is this a bit of PA or do they generally want to listen?
Well, certainly the Chief Minister, when he spoke to me on Easter Sunday on Perspective, he did seem genuine in his endeavour to try to reconnect. I think that was the word he used with the public. Now, sometimes reconnecting with the public can be a genuine attempt to understand and maybe change your rhetoric and policies. Other occasions is, well, the public didn't hear properly the first time, so we're going to say it again, but a bit louder and with some fancy pictures. Hopefully it's the former that they're going for, not the latter.
Yeah, and going on to the Villa Marina ones that we've had, it seemed to be very, very tight and very selective questioning when it came to that. And I'm sure you'll see everything when you're there, Phil, that a lot of people have their hands raised and very few people got selected to ask the questions. So I'm just wondering, is this going to be the same format when they go around? Are they genuinely wanting to listen to the people? Because the way things are looking at the moment, the people are getting really upset that they're not getting listened to. So, that was my point on that. Mm.
And one of the hardest things in politics, I suppose, is the vision thing, which, you know, I don't think many people can argue with the vision that the Isle of Man government has for the island to be a more prosperous place, to ensure that there are more economically active people on the island to pay for those who are not economically active. These things are all pretty sensible things. It's just perhaps sometimes there's a gap between where people's reality is and where the government vision is, and maybe that's where the problem lies.
And again, as I've said on this programme before, Phil, I'm very big on supporting the Isle of Man and its culture and everything for the people of the Isle of Man. And I'm just wondering what agenda the government are actually following here, as we spoke before about what England are doing. We look at the mess of the farming community, and that'll bring me on to the meat plant now, that's happening in all over now. I mean, Ireland and the Netherlands, Germany, if people are following this whole trend of what's going on, you know, and the rebellion is getting a lot stronger as weeks go on. This is not going away. There is problems. And again, as I've said, is What appetite has government got here for actual farming? I'm not talking about solar farms or any other fancy name that they're going to use for farming to displace this, but to actually support farming. Not support farmers or landowners, but support farming, because as far as I see, to go into a future where we want sustainability, we need our own water supply, we need our own power supply, we need our own food. That's the basics of living. Now, dropping onto the meat plant, I believe when you were in government, you had a quite a big businessman on the island at the time who came in to give his opinion on the meat plant. And at that time, I believe he said that he thought, in his view, the meat plant wasn't a viable business. Now, I'm just wondering,
if I pick you up on that, I don't remember anyone saying that it wasn't viable. We did have a someone who was an expert at running meat plants, and running meat plants, I suppose every manufacturing business that you come across, everything that produces a product will say that they're special and a little bit different. But the meat trade certainly appears to be one of those that has some reasonable argument that would back up that it's quite a unique area, and you really do need to have quite a bit of experience in running meat plants to make them work. But we did have a fella, and I keep forgetting his name now, but he had run or turned round failing meat plants, and we were almost making a go of it for a while, but things inevitably change and people move on. But certainly what you said there about having the appetite, and again, excuse the pun, but having the appetite for support to Manx food production, compared certainly with the energy sector, where we seem to be all over trying to ensure that we have energy security, food security doesn't seem to be that high up on government's list. Maybe I've missed something, but maybe if Claire Barber's listening, she'll ring up and explain where I've got that wrong. But certainly talking to farmers, talking to the Farmers Union. Oh, and indeed the switchboard lit up briefly. I thought maybe that was the minister, but no. It doesn't seem as though we're that bothered about the fact that most of our food now comes on the boat, which may or may not sail as a result of interesting climatic conditions.
And that's what bothers me, Phil. The person I'm talking about that engaged with you is not the same person, obviously, but I'm not going to mention any names here, but I have spoken to this person. I sat down and actually had a meeting with this person and spoke to him, and he told me what was actually said. So I'll go back on that and find out, because that was from the horse's mouth.
It may have been the case, but I certainly don't recall anyone saying to me that the actual meat plant was unviable. I mean, there were lots and lots of options of ways in which we could make it better, and indeed, suggestions had been made that perhaps we needed a new plant that was designed in a different way that would have been more efficient to operate, and there was some sense to that. But of course, we at that stage we were fairly early on in the lifetime of the meat plant when I was minister.
And that comes to my point there, Phil. Really, this has been going on for some time. This is not new. This is again just being rehashed up with this latest problem. So this problem has been going on for a while. And like Julian said, why has it dragged on so long? Why has this not been repaired earlier? And again, is that down to the will, or is it just down to incompetence?
I suspect some of it will be down to money. One of the hardest things in government, I've just concluded an interview which will be going out on Sunday with Theresa Cope, and we were discussing this, that it's easy to have the vision. So Manx Care has a vision of the Isle of Man being the best health and social care service for any small island in the world. It's a great vision, but time and time again you get blown off course by a whole load of things that happen, which means that monies have to be targeted elsewhere to deal with whatever the particular event happens to be, and then you find yourself perhaps sometimes more distant from the vision than you'd like to be, and maybe, well, I know that that's been the case with the meat plant, where there's been lots of clarity as to where we want to be, but it's not always easy to get there when bits of machines fail, or, you know, the great example of course has been ShopRite closure and then Tesco taking over and things like this that happen from along the journey, which make it quite difficult for those who are in the positions of power to actually keep us on track and deliver what's needed.
So the bumps in the road yesterday, then they actually might be potholes that we can't afford to fix.
Well, I do remember the Bruce Hannay, the former director of highways, always said to me that the great thing with parked cars and potholes were that they were wonderful for traffic calming measures. Anyway, I suppose go on. Sorry.
Maybe when we're in this new green world and we're planting more trees, we should plant a whole plantation of money trees, and that will get us out of this problem quite quickly, won't it?
Certainly magic money trees, that would be really helpful. Maybe the fairies could help with that. Anyway, thanks very much, Ewan.
That's great. Just on a touching note there, Phil, before you go.
Okay.
Just in changing times now, and the quality of meat in the likes of Aldi's and all these other supermarkets and GMO meat, I think the Isle of Man has got a good future. If the Isle of Man government are going to support it, I think the Isle of Man Farming Society could have a good future, but it needs assistance and help. And in the meantime, that's going to give us our security for food. That's me, Phil. Have a good day.
Okay, good on my own. So loads of texts have been coming in, and in case you hadn't noticed, we're trying something a little bit different. Normally, there's a whole load of texts that come piling in, and I or Andy or whoever's doing the man in line have to be able to work out which bits of text we need to read out, which we don't need to read out, because occasionally there are texts that come in, perhaps designed to trip up the presenter, which really shouldn't be read out on air. But several have come in that should be, and these are they. So, sea defence wall on the Wirral, this is from G. Hope DOI note a new £20 million 4-foot sea defence wall on the Wirral has been overwhelmed by the sea. Flooding is worse because water was trapped by the wall. And then another one here, UK MPs, hi Phil, what do our islanders think about MP Andrew Bridgen and all the trouble with ECHR and WHO? It's important news that needs to be covered here, as it involves us all, and that's from Manx Will. And unfortunately, it doesn't give any more detail than that, and maybe I've been too busy worrying about planting me spuds and not keeping up to date with the news. So maybe Manx Will could give us a little bit more to go on that. Then the minister's road trip sounds good. The trouble is they don't listen to anybody. They have their own agendas, and that's from Alan. I don't know, is that Alan Bell? Maybe not. Alan, anyway, I don't know. I think ministers do listen, but perhaps they struggle to convince people of that sometimes. And then at the steam packet, maybe Comin on their roadshow should open up and tell the truth as to why the steam packet and Manx Development Corporation are not open to freedom of information requests. Something stinks, and that's from Fran. And yes, that is quite surprising, bearing in mind the policies that exist that seem to imply that if public money is involved, then FOIs should be allowed. So interesting. And then some responses to Eddie. This is a bit harsh, but there we go. This is what came in. More unproven nonsense from Eddie. The whole of the heathland is not going to be concreted over, therefore flooding won't be increased. Well, I think that's correct, that the whole of the heathland is not going to be concreted over. But when you're putting large chunks of concrete on places that used to be absorbent. I would have thought that there will be some impact at least. Then another caller response, Fast MI, Phil. Please, we are still waiting to hear from Eddie with the stats estimates from MSPCA Manx Bird Atlas as to how many wild birds on the Isle of Man are killed each year by domestic cats. Why doesn't he tell us? And that's from Andy. And yes, this is an argument often used for people who discuss wind farms. There's also this view that somehow the wind farm causes birds sort of fly into the wind farm, and this causes lots of bird deaths. But actually, the number of injuries are substantially lower than those caused by birds flying into windows and things like that. Back onto the flooding then. It's about time the flooding at Balthayn Roundabout was sorted. It's like driving through a lake, and it's on a bend, so it's difficult to see at night until the last minute, which is dangerous. It's been happening for years, so surely something can be done. And that's from Sue. And possibly when they complete the bypass road that's going to bypass Ballasalla and come out at that Balathane Road roundabout. Maybe that's the time that they're planning to sort out the drainage. But yes, across the island there are significant problems with drainage issues, and maybe this is part of the change that we have. We used to have gangs of men that knew their parishes, and they would know where the flooding points would be. They'd ensure the ditches were clean. There doesn't seem to be much by way of proactive maintenance. It's more of a reactive thing. Maybe that's an unfair charge, but certainly DOI budgets for maintenance had been substantially challenged. Although I do note, and this is positive. Yes, let's say something really positive about one of the ministers at least. Tim Crookle, as DOI minister, does seem to be very much switched on to sorting out maintenance to a far greater extent perhaps than had been in the past. Just a gentle reminder, this is your programme. We're very interested to hear what you have to say. We're particularly interested in hearing your voice. 1366, 1368, and you had missed something out there. And of course you can email studio@manxradio.com and text 166177. And anyway, other things then. Good afternoon, Phil. Have you had a look at Climate Change the movie on YouTube? If not, you should. Well, it's on my to-do list, I have to say. That's from Chris. Cost of living. I'm a 27-year-old accountant who moved here from Norfolk and have lived and worked on the island for the last 5 years and love it here for my young family's sake. Unfortunately, I cannot afford to get on the property ladder here, and there is no advantage in salary take-home anymore compared to the UK. This is what the extra cost of living on the island, or this without the extra cost of living on the island. So unfortunately, my family are having to leave this beautiful island for Norfolk so we can develop a family. And that's from Nathan. Oh, it's very sad to hear that, but great that you've enjoyed living here. And then back on the meat plant, Phil, please, meat plant is advertising for new directors. Do we know why? And that's from Andy. Well, I suspect it's because of a natural churn, but maybe it's something that we need to ask the meat plant about. I do feel a prospective programme on the meat plant is brewing, and hopefully sooner rather than later. And then MHK's, this is, it doesn't give a name. Hi Phil, I agree 100% with that letter you read out. The whole island is in such a terrible state and the MHKs are doing nothing about it. Well, they would argue that they probably are doing something about it, but perhaps they're not doing as much as many people would hope. And then this is an email from a listener about property prices. Dear Phil, great to have you back, fella. Well, that's very kind. I haven't read to see who it is. Maybe it's me dad or my brother. Great to have you back, fella. We rented a 2-bed cottage for around £500 a month for 20 years and only left because the world's worst neighbour moved in and we had a chance to buy. Within a couple of months of leaving, the landlord put our old place up for £950 and got it. I presume that's the monthly rent. Our mortgage, even now, a couple of years later, is £200 less than what the rent has gone up to. In 2 years, we've seen rents like everyone else has rocketed. But yesterday, I saw the absolute pinnacle of the ridiculous rent in Douglas. A small 2-bed semi and saddle stone has gone up for £1,500 a month. Goodness. 6 months ago, you could get a 4-bed detached for that money. Clearly, the ridiculous rent rises of the last couple of years haven't stopped but accelerated. When is government going to intervene, as no first-time buyer could hope to save to buy if rents have now effectively doubled in just 2 years? And that's from Dick. Dick, you may be interested to know that there was an interesting, well, I think an interesting programme. There's going to be another one on agenda this Monday and the Monday next week from the Tynwald Youth Select Committee. And that was their topic is all about housing, and these are young people who are likely to be most severely affected by the problems we've got with housing. So interesting to certainly to listen to those programs. You can listen to the podcast for the one that's just been, and 6 o'clock on Monday's agenda next week. Then we have a few more texts. Methane from beasts. Will plans be made globally to destroy the herds of wildebeests in Africa? Well, I suspect, and this is from Liz D, I suspect that we don't need plans because the herds of animals across the world seem to be being substantially diminished, certainly wild animals, which is something to lament, I think. And we now have Steve on line one. Let's see where's the... Yes, the system is playing ball. So, Steve, fast am I.
How are you doing? You okay?
Yeah, good.
Good, man. Just want to talk to you about the roadworks in Ballasella, if that's okay.
Yeah, certainly.
The other day, I was coming past the airport, not aware of any roadworks ahead, obviously coming around the roundabout, looking down the road, and you see all the brake lights. I thought, I'll join the queue, no other option. So when I got a bit closer, I'm thinking, well, at least they're going to do the main village road, because, as you know, it's anyone who drives that road knows it's falling to pieces. Gets around the corner to find two guys in the road with a bucket of tarmac, putting some tarmac around the edge of some ironwork, obviously, manhole cover that's broken away. So I thought, fair enough, they must be doing, you know, in patches the whole village. They were causing absolute chaos how they'd done it. It was three-way lights, and the time of day that they put the lights up causes absolute chaos. Can't even tell you. Which they shouldn't be doing it. The way they do it shouldn't be done. So what they're doing is, I'm thinking, well, go on, lads, get it done. Got a nice road coming through when I get back. So yeah. I'm out all day driving back to find... I actually pulled over in amazement. They've actually done one little piece of tarmac around the manhole cover and left it behind them, breaking to pieces, left all the other holes, left all the other cracks, all the other manhole covers that are breaking away, left the entire village road in the state they found it in, closed the roads, caused absolute chaos for one little area around the manhole cover. Now, what is the justification and cost involved in that?
Well, you have to wonder, it's fair to say, and no doubt there would have been some reason for it. But I must tell you that we've only got about 20 seconds left. But yeah,
I know.
But yeah, thanks for ringing in that. Yeah. OK.
No problem.
Thanks, Steve. Cheers.
Bye.
Yeah, and this is often... a concern that's expressed that what on earth are they doing? They've only done such and such, and why did they not do the rest? And yeah, it's one of those mysteries of life, perhaps. Well, I've enjoyed The Man in Line. I hope you have. There's Kelly's Eye coming up with a view from Carnarvon. We've also got Nenda's Tree with Christy D coming up at or just after 1 o'clock. Yeah, lots of interesting things happening in the Isle of Man at the moment. Not least your opportunity to go and talk to your MHKs, well, particularly to go and talk to your ministers. And of course, if you're living in Douglas South, you can talk to your MHKs on tomorrow's Man in Line. When hopefully Andy will be back and raring to go, as they say. Yeah, well, go to my Moyus and Geister, Chris and Man in Line. Thanks for listening to The Man in Line.
60 years serving you as the nation's station. This is Manx Radio.
Peter, amid the green grass, the dying ferns and the sheep, what are you looking at today?
Several things, I suppose, David. I could say the view from here is capital.
Right, Douglas.
Indeed. It's a view of the capital as well. We've come up the track towards the BBC transmitter on Canaan, and we've turned our back on all that and we're looking out. So, starting on the left, there we can see Farm Hill. I can see the top of the Springfield nursing home. We come down across, we can see the red roofs over at Spring Valley, the sloping roof of the power station. Beyond that, the bright lights of the all-weather pitch at the National Sports Centre. Two rather narrow twin chimneys from the old Nobles, as it is now. Above that, Ballacameen School, which of course, when built and designed by Alec Davison, was a perfect building. It worked from the centre and the two sides matched. Of course, since then they've added on bits and theatres and goodness knows what, so the left-hand side end now is a bit out of balance. What was once very tall flats in Lord Street are now diminutive compared yes. to everything.
With the car park at the back.
And behind that, this massive car park on Shaw's Brow, which is perhaps how it should have been built originally anyway, which looks like a series of postal slots. It's like pigeonholes, the way it's been done. Yeah, you can see the sweep of the bay. I think from the Manx Radio end, you get that Naples of the North feel, perhaps more than here. But in terms of teaching your children to locate things, because so many go around, they go around the island, let alone town, and haven't a clue where they are. It's from here you can pinpoint. In fact, if we raise our eyes, we can see the College of Further Education, we can see the Douglas Mosque, or better known to most as the chimney on the crematorium, and then out beyond, standing now quite splendid and neatly painted in white, is the Falcon Cliff, now an office block. It could so easily have been swept away, but wasn't. And then, of course, you come over to the right, which is total utopia, which is Onken, centre of the universe.